So tonight I'm going to talk about this curious term, karma, and how it shows up in Buddhism. And the first thing I'll say is that karma, it's a Sanskrit word, and originally it just meant action. That's all it meant. And it still has that sense in Hinduism. For example, the Bhagavad Gita talks about karma yoga, the yoga of living a life of spiritual action, a life of selfless service. Gandhi is seen as a kind of exemplar of karma yoga. And there's a way that the Buddha, and it may well have been the historical Buddha who did this, he kind of changed the meaning of the word. So it wasn't just about action, but action and its consequences. And really this worldview where there was this deep continuity between the action and the consequences of the action. And that's more how it's used in our modern day world. And I guess the first thing I want to make clear about karma is it's not really about reward and punishment. I think there's this way that kind of the Puritan narrative of this country predisposes us to think in terms of reward and punishment. A much better word for karma is simply consequences. And you think about it just in the ordinary sense in life, there aren't really so much rewards and punishments in life. They're just consequences, you know? You cultivate a bunch of good habits, you know, eating healthy and exercising, meditating and yoga and all that, then chances are that's going to have a lot of good consequences over the years. You know, you smoke and drink and use drugs and overeat every day and stuff like that, that's likely to have bad consequences over the years, you know. And of course, part of the mystery of life is that, you know, all these things are so unpredictable. There's the people, you know, who smoke and do all the horrible things and live to 105, and the person who jogs and is vegetarian and drops dead at the age of 40. And there's something, how to say it? Each person has their own dharma. And there's something deeply mysterious about that. There's something very humbling about, you know, we really don't understand the life journey, the soul journey of another person. One problem of the whole reward and punishment way of looking at karma is that very typically we think of the things that we like as rewards and the things that we don't like as punishments, you know? But of course it's funny, and it's certainly something that's happened in my life many times. I assume it's happened in everybody's life. There are those things that I was really looking forward to, and boy, this is going to be so great when I get it. And then I get it, and it's like, oh, is this it? And then sometimes you get something that you really wanted, and then it turns out to be something horrifying, and then you're trying to figure out a way to get rid of it, you know? And then there are other times that something happens, and it's difficult to go through. It feels like a punishment when it's happening. But you actually realize, in retrospect, wow, I'm really glad I went through that, you know? And so the very simplistic idea of, you know, what we like and what we don't like being rewards and punishments does not really work when we think about it. There's a quote I want to read. This is a quote from the Chinese philosopher Mencius. Mencius was a Confucian philosopher. He's considered like the number two guy in the Confucian tradition, the man who brought a heart quality to the Confucian tradition. And Mencius says, "So it is that whenever heaven invests a person with great responsibility, it first tries her resolve, exhausts her muscles and bones, starves her body, leaves her destitute, and confounds her every endeavor. In this way, her patience and endurance are developed, and her weakness are overcome." And so this idea that sometimes if you're going through a challenging time, it's not a punishment at all. It's like heaven is setting you up for something really big, and it's preparing you. It's like, you know, now you're moving on to the advanced course and it gets harder, you know? And so I love that quote because it really flips on its ear the whole idea that, you know, good things are a reward and bad things are a punishment. So what is karma? Karma is consequences. At one level, one very practical level of thinking about karma, it's just the ordinary emotional intelligence kinds of consequences that we see in everyday life. You know? If I'm a real jerk and I scream bloody murder at somebody, well, probably that person's not going to trust me anymore. You know? Quite likely, some of the other people who see me screaming bloody murder at that person are not going to trust me anymore. You know? These are just ordinary consequences. You know? I'll share a story from my life, kind of a comparison of two different people. I was a member of an international meditation group for 20 years, and I left that around the time that I came to Berkeley. And so after I left that group, I was still meditating on my own, but I didn't have a sangha. And so I was searching for a sangha. And I started going to a sangha of one woman here in Berkeley. And she had studied in Burma with meditation teachers and had a lot of experience. And I went to her sangha a few weeks, and there was one week that she gave a talk, and then she asked some question, and she was having us all go around, and I forget the exact topic, but we were all saying something on this topic. And then there was a woman who was answering the question, and she was taking more of like a roundabout way to get to, you know, the answer to the question. And at one point, this woman who's running the sangha just snapped at her. And then it was kind of this big to-do, and the woman got offended and this sort of thing. And it was sort of a shocking moment. And I didn't know what to make of it. And I decided to go back the next week just to see, you know, did this woman, you know, apologize or take responsibility for it or something like this. I went back, and the group was considerably smaller then. That woman wasn't back. A lot of the other people weren't back. And it felt kind of icky. So I didn't go to that sangha anymore. A few months later, I heard about this place, the East Bay Healing Collective. I came here on a Monday night, and there was this remarkable woman, Rain, who was leading the Monday night sangha. The first time I attended, I just fell in love with this sangha, and I started coming every week. And then after a while, you know, Rain and her partner, they got pregnant. She needed someone else to run it. And, you know, next thing you know, I'm sitting in this seat, you know. But I know that it means a great deal to Rain because Rain, she lives in Marin now, but she loves this place. She worked here for years. And it means so much to her that I'm running it, you know. And so this one woman had this amazing consequence of seeing this place that she loved handed on to a friend. You know, and the other woman, you know, I don't know where she is now. I'm no part of her life. So anything I might have offered to her, it's not part of her life now, you know? And so again, just consequences. So one level is kind of at emotional intelligence. Another level gets a little more into depth psychology. Carl Jung has this idea that in a dream, every person we see in a dream is really an aspect of ourselves. You know? So I might dream about friends, I might dream about enemies, I might dream about teachers or colleagues, but everyone is representing some part of myself in the dream. And this is something certainly, you know, in dream work I've found, at least in my own experience, that idea really resonates quite deeply. And so what this means is that at some level of the psyche, there's no sharp distinction between self and other. You know, that there's, for every person I know, every person that I'm either I care about or a person that I'm angry at or whatever, there's kind of a part of me that I'm holding on to that person represents. And so if I'm angry or hurtful to somebody outside of me, there's a way that I'm being angry or hurtful to a part of myself. you know? And we get in the, you know, these narratives that we can compartmentalize things. Well, I'm going to be angry to that person, but then I'm going to be nice to these people, you know? But if I'm carrying that within me, that kind of anger, it's still in my energy field, you know? And people who are sensitive can feel that. And they might not even know why, you know, gee, something feels off about Mike. I don't know. I don't trust him. Because they're feeling that edge in me, you know? There are a few people that actually see energy fields and are very, you know, can talk about it explicitly. But in some ways, we're all influenced by each other's energy fields all the time. Another level, which is, I would say, a little more mystical, there's a way that ultimately we're all made of love. You know, and I would say, you know, we have a physical body, and even the physical body, you know, the digestion and immune system, there's so many systems that are expressions of love. But then there's the energy body, and then the more subtle and subtle layers, and it's like each layer is more and more purely love. At least ideally. And so if I act in a way that is out of alignment with love, either toward myself or toward somebody else, then I am misaligning myself at all these energetic levels. And in my experience, what happens when I'm misaligned at those energetic levels, then life becomes a struggle. And there are lots of things, there are obstacles popping up and things are not flowing my way. And if I can be more aligned with love, then the world becomes more magic and there's more synchronicity and flow. And again, not reward or punishment, just consequences. And incidentally, this is a very important thing to think about with karma. You know, the Puritan narrative is that we have to be nice to everyone else. You know, I can be, you know, mean and abusive to myself, but a good person is nice to everyone else, like that kind of thing. Buddhism makes no distinction at all. You know, like meanness is not allowed, whether it's to someone else or to myself. Like it's just as bad either way. You know, it's not better or worse or anything. It's just not niceness, you know? And I think it may be very typical of say, you know, Berkeley, good Berkeley people who come to a meditation sangha at Monday night, we're probably generally pretty nice people out in the world, but are we nice to ourselves, you know? And there are consequences there also, and it's sometimes very hard to look at those consequences, you know? The Buddha said, you could search this entire universe and you would never find another being more worthy of compassion than yourself. One big idea of karma is that it's not a fixed sentence. Karma can be changed. There's this amazing passage from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, the guy who, like, Mr. Yoga, you know. And he said, the subtle forces of corruption can be escaped by reversing their course. One can escape the effects of their turning through meditation. Subliminal attentions formed in actions rooted in the force of corruption is realized in the present or potential birth. As long as the root exists, actions ripen into birth, a term of life and experience of the world. These actions bear joyful or sorrowful fruit according to the actor's virtue or vice. Suffering that has not yet come can be escaped. And that's one of the claims of spiritual practice. Suffering that has not yet come can be escaped. And again, even at just an ordinary level of emotional intelligence, it's kind of intuitive, you know. If I'm a jerk to somebody or in some situations, then that's going to lead to bad consequences. But if I can be big enough to apologize, take responsibility, you know, that sort of thing, it's not always magic. It doesn't always fix things. But, you know, at least sometimes it kind of mitigates the effect. You know, it's much better than if I had just been steadfastly a jerk, you know. Now, Buddhism tends to have this large narrative around karma. That is something that affects one life to the next. And that, you know, however you're born in this life, you know, all the things that you didn't get to choose are results of your past karma and are rewards or punishments or whatever. That's this, you know, the big narrative of Buddhism. And I want to acknowledge that, but I also want to say that there's no way that I can tell you whether that's true or not. You know? I will say it is, I find it tremendously humbling when I think of all the situations that human beings are born into in this world. You know, all the pain, the suffering, the patterns of abuse, violence, warfare, you know, and I certainly don't feel empowered to sit in judgment and, you know, proclaim what it means, you know, that sort of thing. Lucky enough, I can figure out my own life, you know. But I would say that when I do look at my life, what's very clear to me, what's been very clear to me in doing my spiritual work over the years, is that the core pains that I suffered were really essential to my becoming who I am. That my journey to greatness, in some sense, needed to be stimulated by those core wounds. And so there's a way that I have a kind of gratitude, and I can almost believe this narrative that in some sense I might have chosen this incarnation to have that particular pattern of wounding that would allow me to walk this particular journey in my soul. Now, again, I can't prove that that's true. I can't tell you that that's true. But the most I can say is that that's a worldview that really allows me to look at my whole life with gratitude. And there is something tremendously powerful about taking in one's whole self with gratitude that way. So at this point, I'll hand out the quote sheets. I have the quote from Patanjali and the quote from Mencius that I already read. Mr. Leonardo da Vinci tells us very simply, realize that everything connects to everything else. Mary Baker Eddy says, sin makes its own hell and goodness its own heaven. There's an image that I like at one point. It's a little parable from the Christian tradition that someone had a dream. And an angel took them and said, I'm going to show you a vision of hell. And it was this room with all these people. They were starving. And they were seated around these bowls of soup that just smelled absolutely delicious. But they all had long poles that were like, they had spoons tied to their hands that were like 6 feet long. And there was no way they could possibly feed themselves. And they were all just struggling and starving, trying to feed themselves, and they were miserable. And then the angel said, I'll show you heaven. And it was exactly the same setup, but the people were feeding each other. You know? And I think it's so exemplary of, you know, hell versus heaven. There's also a great Zen story. A samurai comes up to the Zen master and he says, tell me, Zen master, is there really such a thing as heaven and hell? Zen master looks at him and says, are you a samurai? You look like a beggar. Samurai starts to get mad. Come on, I bet that sword's so weak. You couldn't cut off my head with that, you loser. At this point, the samurai's furious. He starts to pull out his sword. And the Zen master says, here open the gates of hell. And immediately the samurai has realized that he's being given a teaching. He sheathes the sword, and he bows to the master. And the master says, here open the gates of heaven. From Robert Ingersoll, there are in nature neither rewards nor punishment. There are consequences. Robert Louis Stevenson, oh, I love this one. Sooner or later, everyone sits down to a banquet of consequences. Wow. Elbert Hubbard says, men are not punished for their sins, but by them. The writer Edith Wharton says, people pay for what they do and still more for what they have allowed themselves to become. And they pay for it simply by the lives they lead. Carl Jung says, the wrongs we have done, thought, or intended will wreak its vengeance on our souls. Swami Sivananda says, a mountain is composed of tiny grains of earth. The ocean is made of tiny drops of water. Even so, life is but an endless series of little details, actions, speeches, and thoughts, and the consequence of whether good or bad of even the least of them are far-reaching. I often say the thing that is that most shapes a human life are the things we do every single day. You know, the things we repeat every single day, those have the biggest impact on our lives. From C.S. Lewis, good and evil increase at both compound interest. That is why the little decision you and I make every day are of such infinite importance. The smallest good act today is the capture of a strategic point from which a few months later, you may be able to go on to victories you never dreamed of. An apparently trivial indulgence in lust or anger today is the loss of a ridge or railway or bridgehead from which the enemy may launch an attack otherwise impossible. So he phrases it a little bit in warfare terminology, but it's kind of poetic. Norman Cousin simply says, wisdom consists of the anticipation of consequences. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the man with whom the Beatles studied, said, problems are success. They are all the result of our actions. Karma. The philosophy of action is that no one else is the giver of peace or happiness. One's own karma, one's own action are responsible to come to bring either happiness or success or whatever. It's often the message we least want to hear. You're totally responsible for your own life, you know. Daisuke Akito says, even if things don't unfold the way you expect, don't be disheartened or give up. Very simple. Wayne Dyer says, how people treat you is their karma. How you react is yours. Deepak Chopra says, karma is only in space-time and causality. Your real self resides non-locally. Ken Levine says, we all make choices, but in the end, our choices make us. Dr. Alexandra Katahakis, who writes about things like erotic intelligence, says, if your actions were to boomerang back on you instantly, would you still act the same? Sharon Salzberg says, things don't just happen in this world of arising and passing away. We don't live in some kind of crazy accidental universe. Things happen according to certain laws, laws of nature, laws such as the law of karma, which teach us that as a certain seed gets planted, so that fruit will be. Sayang Mipham says, like gravity, karma is so basic, we often don't even notice it. Rick Riordan says, kind of enigmatically, strange things conspire when one tries to cheat fate. And Saul Luckman says, contrary to popular misconception, karma has nothing to do with punishment or reward. It exists as part of our holographic universe, binary or dualistic operating system, only to teach us responsibility for our creations. And all things we experience are our creations.